This is the Chicago Golf Report podcast, hosted by Walter Liss. Today's guest is the founder and CEO of Lola Sport, Lisa O'Hurley.
All the way from the beginning, how did you get involved in golf? Because you have an extensive background in golf, all the way from your playing career, and then you find your business career. How did it all begin?
Yeah, it's pretty much all I know. I grew up in it. So I'm an only child to two parents who worked in the country club industry. My dad was a general manager since the time I was born. He was with, at the time, CCA, Club Corps, now Invited. It's changed names a few times. So he was with them when I was born, and we were sort of traveling with Club Corps for quite a while during my growing up time. And then he went independent and managed some other clubs as a general manager. My mom was a merchandise buyer. And so it truly is all I know.
And so then you then kind of transitioned into playing the game of golf. And you've had some success in golf. Talk a little bit about what you felt when you got on the course and you're like, oh, I think I might be pretty good at this.
Yeah, you know, we were living in Texas at the time, in a town in a suburb of Houston. And the high school, we had just moved there, and the high school that I was going into had the number one girls team in the state of Texas. And at the time, I wasn't playing at all, but I, of course, grew up in it. And I thought, well, that sounds kind of fun. So I went to my dad's club and found somebody to give me lessons, who is now, who is Billy Ray Brown, a kind of a famous guy now on Golf Channel. So Billy Ray Brown, when he was in college, gave me my first lessons. It was me and a friend of mine, and I sort of got better and she didn't. So she quit and I just kept going, and I played on that team, and that team was pretty good. And then we moved to Phoenix. My dad then took a job as manager of Phoenix Country Club, and the team that I played on in Phoenix, which was Xavier College Prep, is sort of infamous for girls golf. And so I think by my third year of actually playing, I think I got down to a two. So I played a lot. I went from zero to, 60 real quick.
So one thing that strikes me is your first lesson is with Billy Ray Brown, who's been a broadcaster for a long time. Before that was a touring professional. And it strikes me as the idea of that if you're that close to, say, the pinnacle of the game with somebody who's got that kind of cachet, they played on the tour, they're been around for a long time. Do you think that kind of opened up your mind to that fact that, well, I know Billy Ray and he taught me, and there could be possibilities, not only just in the game, because obviously his career was what it was as a player, but it's taken on legs way beyond that as a broadcaster. Sure. Do you think that opened your mind up to the possibility that this could be a career for you?
At the time, no. It really wasn't until after college or in the middle of college when I was playing for Baylor University and living in Waco, Texas, and picked up a issue of the Dallas Morning News back when we used to read the newspaper. And on the cover of the sports section was an announcement about a golf television network that was coming into formation. And you know how the game of golf is. It's a very small world. And at the time I thought, well, that sounds kind of interesting and maybe a little fun. And I was graduating and I was planning to be a high school teacher. I got my degree in education, and I thought, well, I can always use that. And maybe this is something I should do sort of for fun in the interim. And so I put some feelers out there to people that I knew in the golf world. And sure enough, I knew somebody, connected pretty intimately with the Golf Channel. And so I sent in my resume, which was very short at the time. I had a lot of excitement about it. And I certainly knew a lot about the game. And I got hired on at the Golf Channel. I think I was employee number 27. And I worked there for 2 years before they ever hired somebody younger than me. I was really, really green there. and ended up working there for 11 years. And it turned out to be a great career shift. And to be honest, I never went back to teaching. But, you know, I will say that my degree in education at least allowed me to be able to speak in front of large groups. And so that was, I was in sales immediately at the Golf Channel. And so that really helped kind of form that path for me. And then there was sort of no looking back. Then I knew I was in the golf business and I was there to stay.
It's a very interesting connection with the mindset of becoming a high school teacher. And then you pivot into the golf business and you pivot into sales. And so what did you take from that switch of the mindset? Because like you said, you're able to speak in front of people, you know, you feel like this, I'm prepared for this, but sales, there's so much more. It's relationship building and it's, you know, learning all the various differences between people. What do you think? Do you think that was sort of your way of finding your correct path was like, okay, I think it's the being a teacher might be one way, but then the golf business. And then when did it click for you? Yeah. Like, I think I really like this.
You know, and to be honest, when I first started at the Golf Channel, I was more so in the cable business. I mean, early on at the Golf Channel, there were very few golfers, actually. It was me and our CFO. I mean, you know, everybody loosely played, but not really played. So, I mean, there weren't that many great players there. Maybe some on-air talent. I'll give them that fact because they certainly did come from golf. But mostly I was in the cable business. And early on, I was in affiliate sales. So I was selling the network into cable companies and satellite providers across the U.S. And one of my jobs when I would sell in the Golf Channel is I would have to go and train everybody who worked at that cable company on the Golf Channel on what it was. And so I was, you know, every week in rooms full of hundreds of people. And I thought, you know, thankfully, I actually know how to do this. And I know how to read a room and speak to everybody in the room. And I knew how to write on a chalkboard if I needed mm-hmm. to do that. So, you know, you take with you what you can. And so I was, and I was in that position for 4 years before they sort of moved me into more of a golf side of it at the Golf Channel. I ended up renegotiating tour contracts, which was very interesting for about a year and a half. And then I went into the endemic side. So I ended up selling advertising placement, product placement, and player placement on the air of all the golf companies. So I had Nike and Titleist and TaylorMade and Callaway. And that was really fun because I got to really use my golf knowledge to make each one of those companies kind of stand out on the air.
So the thing that strikes me is the idea that sales is often called the golden skill. It's considered to be like that one primary thing that if you can learn how to sell, then you can open up so many different doors. And it certainly sounds like that was the case for you. Did it feel like you, once you started to cultivate that skill and you became more confident with it, plus your ability as a golfer and your confidence within the game, do you think that's what helped you continue with the Golf Channel for so long and find success?
Yes, and I just really loved it. You know, I think that sales is one thing, but I've, to be honest, in my career, I've only sold things that I really love. I don't think I could sell everything. So that really helped me. I mean, I loved that network. I love what I do now. I love Lola Sport. I can sell that all day long. But, you know, I remember at one point toward the end of my time at the Golf Channel, when they were being purchased by Comcast, and we had a meeting, you know, basically saying you were going to sell now the Golf Channel and then also E Entertainment. And I was like, no, thanks. I don't love E Entertainment. I don't want to sell that, you know? So it's funny. You kind of, you go with what you know, but I truly believe that for sales, you really have to love it.
So was that the pivot point then for you to consider the fashion industry then in fashion business?
Well, you know, I am a girl and I have always loved fashion. I mean, that has been, it has run through my life. I'm a shopper, you know, unfortunately for my husband, I do like to shop. And, you know, as a golfer, I always had a hard time finding golf clothes. And I'm also a more petite girl. And it was just hard finding things that fit, things that I like, things that felt comfortable on the course. And I used to have to go to, you know, kind of random stores in the mall really, you know, digging for stuff. And it, and to be honest, that lasted a long time. It wasn't until I had gotten married. I'd left the Golf Channel at that point for a few years. And my husband and I were playing, we were pretty regular competitors in the Dunhill Links over in St. Andrews. And it was then that I came across the Golfino store at the Old Course Hotel. And I walked in and it was like, love at first sight. And I finally had found like a brand that fit me, that I like style-wise. And so therefore I used to bring extra suitcases when we would go, because at the time it wasn't for sale in America and I knew I had to have it. So I would go there and just, and really, really shop.
So what was the point that you said, okay, this is, you became not just a shopper, but that would became your career. How did you transition into that?
So we had, my husband and I have a son, and when he was going into kindergarten, at that point I had already left the Golf Channel and had been kind of a stay-at-home mom for a few years. And when he was going into school, I was really missing it. And I told my husband one night over dinner, I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to Germany and, I'm going to ask them if I can start their business in America. And, you know, I mean, it's funny because I had known a couple other people who had tried that, who had met with the Golfino owners and it didn't work out so well, but I don't know. I thought I'm going to give it a shot. And so I prepared a business plan. I'm pretty sure they looked at what I spend at their store in the Old Course Hotel. I mean, they, to take the meeting, they clearly knew what I was talking about. And so I went over there with on kind of a wing and a prayer, to see if I could start their business in America. And, you know, that was in November of 2012. I started January 2013. They sent me one set of samples and I started at the PGA show. And they said, let's just see how it goes. And it went great for quite a while. For 7 years, it went great.
It seems like a huge leap of faith to go from taking that trip and then saying, yes, you can do it. And then you go to the PGA show, which is huge, and you've got all these manufacturers, and you're just, at what point then did you say, oh, maybe this isn't a good idea? Or was that never the case? Was it?
I never said that.
Okay.
No, I never said it. Because I also knew, I knew what I had. And I mean, when I was showing the clothes, as I was selling the clothes, I was drooling over the clothes at the same time. I mean, I loved them. So, and you know, I started sort of, I knew that there were going to be other people who had heard of the line. And so that was sort of how I started, is I created kind of a mass postcard, if you will, to what I believe to be the top clubs in America. And I just said, you know, Golfino now arriving in the United States, to book an appointment. And literally I booked my 3 days full at the PGA show, just off of that. People who had heard of it, whose members had been to Scotland or England or France or somewhere had seen it. And that's how I got my first business. And then I just kind of went from there and ended up, you know, developing a sales team, and we ended up having a store in Palm Beach, and, you know, it became a thing.
And so how long then were you with Golfino? And then what was the transition then to start your own brand?
Yeah. So I was with Golfino for 7 years and had built that business pretty substantially here in the United States and had a great sales team. And unfortunately it was COVID that sort of killed Golfino. They had 32 freestanding stores worldwide, only one here in the United States. And as you know, of course, when stores had to close, that did not bode well for them. And you know, even though golf was sort of on a high, they had such a footing in retail that it became hard. And they ended up selling the couple who owned it, and they had been in the business a long time. I mean, they were probably kind of tired anyway, but they had had it for over 30 years. And they ended up selling the brand to a company in England who, you know, when I met with them, they pretty much made it clear that they didn't want to do wholesale business, and they definitely didn't want to do business in America. So at the time, you know, after, you know, you kind of, you know, lick your wounds for about a week and say, oh, well, I guess I'm out of a job. And then I thought, well, you know, I don't know, maybe not. Because at the same time, our biggest competitor, which was Tory Burch Sport, they were sort of also getting out of golf, and they were going more toward their core business. And so there were a lot of country clubs that were left without a premium ladies line because they weren't going to get Tory and they weren't going to get Golfino. And once we started calling our accounts and saying, you know, I'm sorry, but Golfino's no more. We're not going to be delivering your next collections. I mean, then we really started to hear the feedback of our customers saying, oh no, what am I going to offer the ladies? And to be honest, even though Golfino sold ladies and men's, it was in the US predominantly ladies. The ladies line was just what really took off. And so, you know, it took me another couple of days before, you know, I said to my husband, you know, boy, this would be a great time for somebody to start a premium ladies golf line. And so he said, well, what about you? And, you know, I had to sit back a second and think, okay, do I even know how to do it? And then once I kind of laid out on paper all the people that I knew, and, you know, I paid attention pretty well at Golfino, and I knew manufacturers and I knew designers, and, you know, I definitely had the customers and I had a sales team, and I just kind of had to put it all together. So I laid out the puzzle pieces. It wasn't like I, you know, had dreamed of having my own line, but it was really built more out of necessity because, you know, I still wanted to be able to provide lady golfers with great clothes that fit well. And so we transitioned, you know, basically our Golfino business into Lola Sport.
So the thing that stands out, we were able to review Lola Sport a little bit earlier in the year. And the thing that stood out to Therese, who's our reviewer, was exactly what you said. The quality is incredible. The fit was incredible. Mm-hmm. And I guess that'd be the first place to start is when you're coming up with a premium ladies line like that, what's the most important component of it? Or is it the materials that you're looking at? Is it these designers? Like what have you learned in the time since you started Lowe's?
Yeah. Well, the fabrics are a big deal. And we source all of our fabrics from Italy and France. And let me tell you, when you feel two fabrics together, when you feel Lola Sport and you feel another line, I'm not going to name names, but another line, you can definitely feel the quality difference. And, you know, when that fabric is against your body, you can 100% feel the difference. And it's important to have all of the, you know, the technical components, the SPF and the moisture wicking and the stretch and all of that, but which we do have. But I have to say that just the buttery feeling of our fabrics is really what sets us apart. And then, you know, and then the styling. So, you know, I chose my favorite designer who was with Golfino at the time. Prior to that, he was with Burberry. He's an English chap and I adore him. And he has got a really great sense of style. And it's been fun to now kind of team up with him a little bit. I mean, I provide very little in that he provides a lot, but it's fun to watch his process. And, you know, and because it is a very fashion-y process. I mean, he's looking at haute couture in Paris, and we're looking at, you know, color trends and way before we create our line. So everything is very fashion forward as well. But, you know, it's the fabrics and the fit are really what set us apart.
Can you talk a little bit about the new line and the inspiration for it?
Sure. Because
to me, it seems like, boy, where do they come up with these ideas? Where's the creativity come from for that?
Well, you know, it's my motto that if we can't have fun, then why do it? So, you know, we do have a little bit of fun here. Our newest line is our 007 line. And, you know, you would never think of ladies golf and 007, but I was, you know, again, going back to all the things that you pick up by being a golfer. I was very fortunate when he was alive. I played a few rounds of golf with Sean Connery, the original 007. And I just adored him as a person. And, you know, in our time together, I did talk a little bit about James Bond, and we talked about the timing and the, you know, the Bond girls and their fashion. And I always thought it was so cool. And it was really cool to hear him talk about it too, about how, you know, in those movies, you're trying to make the women look alluring, but not, you know, you don't want to put off your viewer either. So, mm-hmm. You know, they're very beautiful and sensual and alluring. And you know, when we were coming up with this new fall collection, as Paul started to design it, I thought, oh, this looks very Bond girl to me. And then it kept just kind of snowballing into it. And so we ended up naming all five of our collections after five James Bond movies. And, you know, we took a little bit of inspiration from where those movies were set, from the colors that were visible in the movie, and created the 007 collection. So our first one that is out right now in July is Skyfall, which actually, hang on, I have some of the coloring here, which is really great. So Skyfall is based in navy, which we make a really true dark navy for a European navy. But then we've also got these two awesome colors. So this is Flyboy Blue, which mm-hmm. is a blue that looks good on everybody, trust me. And then we have Aurora, which is sort of a citron. Now this one, if you were to go for a fashion color, this is the color of the moment right now, mm-hmm. sort of citron green. We call it Aurora because it's a little bit like the Aurora Borealis. It's kind of a mod color, which also happens to be very James Bond-esque. So those are our two colors that we're setting against navy in Skyfall. And then we've got a really cool print called the Skyfall print. And, you know, it is a little mod. It's a little 60s-ish and, you know, very alluring and fun and, you know, definitely something you don't see everywhere.
So one of the staples, it seems like, from my perspective, of your brand is the Very Pant. Can you talk a little bit about the idea behind that and how it's manufactured? Because it's the fit and everything cut. It's just such a, you could see, it's a premium pant.
It is. And it's our best seller by far is the Very Pant. We make it in four core colors, navy, black, white, and red. And then each season we make it in at least six other fashion colors. So it's really popular by all the colors you can get. But it is a straight, sort of lightly tapered ankle pant. It's made out of French soffoletta, which is extremely stretchy. I mean, when I say that I can put the pant on, I can play golf, I can do yoga, I can have dinner all in the same pant. It's pretty remarkable. And it's a four pocket design. They are not pull on pants. You actually have to exert yourself by buttoning your own pants. I think we make a great pull on pant too, but sometimes I think, you know, the golf world gets a little too lazy. So this actually is a normal pant, which I think also lends to its class a bit. And it has belt loops. We make belts that are great to go with it. But the Very Pant is also named after, it's named from Seinfeld. My husband was in Seinfeld. He played Jay Peterman. And in our house, we have a couple of very Peterman-esque lines that we throw around all the time. And for years, we have always talked about the Very Pant. Because at one point in his time on Seinfeld, I think it was, he said, oh, it's the very pant I trek the Himalayas in, or something to the point that it was a specific pant and that it was a great pant. And so so we say that in our house. And so when we were naming our pants, that's the name we gave them, was the Very Pant, because they are great and they are specific. And I use it in my marketing sort of like, it's the Very Pant I broke 80 in, it's the Very Pant I won the club championship in, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense. Let me finish up two final questions. Number one, what do you see is the potential future for the Lola brand? I mean, you've made huge strides so quickly. Have you thought further down the path, or are you kind of, you know, you got your lines and this is where we're going? Or?
Sure. No, you do a little bit. I mean, right now we're still geographically growing. So, you know, we are pretty heavy in some areas of the US, but our goal is to get more sales reps and to grow into some other areas of the United States. So that's first and foremost, that's on the front burner. And then I would say we're getting a lot of inquiries from Canada and from the UK and Europe. And that is a little bit more labor intensive, but is definitely on the middle burner. So I think that you'll see us soon there, because we definitely have that sort of styling that would do well in Europe, and certainly in Canada as well. And you know, thirdly, you know, we might end up expanding the line a little bit. In fact, this season, because we have an Indy car, which is also sort of unusual, we created our first men's collection. So that was fun. And we have that right now online and it looks fantastic. It's, I don't know if it's going to, if we're going to end up doing more. Right now it's a limited edition because I never said I'd do men's. Mm-hmm. And here it is. So, but you know, I would like to eventually maybe do girls' clothes, you know, sort of like Mommy and Me matching. I think that, you know, I love to watch girls coming up in golf. And would also like to, present them with something nice to wear. So that might be on the line as well. So I don't know. I mean, I'm open to all sorts of ideas and sometimes things just come to me in the middle of the night and then we have to do them. In fact, in a month, we have our first dog sweater unveiling so that you can match your dog, which I think is very, very important in life. So, you know, mm-hmm. those are some of the odd things that come to me in the middle of the night, but then all of a sudden we have to do it. So, there's going to be a lot of fun things coming for Lola Sport.
Yeah, it caught my attention when I was looking at the website. Oh, she's got a men's collection already, which is surprising. It looks beautiful. It's really cool.
I'm going to send you some.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it.
Okay, good.
Getting the feedback on your female line, it's like, wow, they really make good stuff. Good. I wanted to go back to something you just had said about the not knowing the fashion business, what you said, you're looking for sales reps.
Yeah.
Is that, do you hire sales reps then to sell to the clubs or what's the role of a sales rep for you?
So typically in our golf world, they are independent reps. So they'll sell a few different lines. They might sell another men's line or a bag line or, you know, gloves or something like that, shoes. So they'll come to a club, you know, with sort of an array of brands. It's difficult to find. I mean, it's not a career that I think a lot of young people are choosing because a lot of it is commission-based, but you can make, you know, your time is yours, which is great. And you get to travel the world going to golf clubs, which isn't so bad either. We have reps in about half of the United States and we're looking for other reps as well. So, you know, pretty soon we'll have a full team and then we'll be conquering the US.
That sounds great. So last question, it's a golf related question. I know that Pebble Beach is very important for you for obvious reasons, but if we talk in terms of just put your golfer hat on, what is the course that we would say maybe beyond Pebble Beach, but the course that means the most to you? Like what's your special place as a golfer?
Well, that's a hard question. There's so many, when John and I were able to play the Dunhill, those courses over there, St. Andrews, Carnoustie, Kings Barnes, those certainly mean a lot to me. I have great memories on each one, which is really awesome. And here's what I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you a unique one. I have a special place in my heart for one of the clubs that carries us in Vail, Colorado, Eagle Springs Golf Club. Because when I was playing there after a sales meeting once with the director of golf, Howard Glasser, I made a hole in one on a par four. And that is maybe, I don't know, I almost quit the game then because I thought, well, what else is there to do after that? So that, and you know, the membership was so sweet. They all, everybody who was on site came out and brought champagne and it was really sweet. So that one holds a special place in my heart.
I wonder if I could sneak one more question in for you. Sure. It just hit me, the start of the Golf Channel. Do you have a story of interacting with Arnold Palmer?
Oh my gosh, I've got a million.
Yeah.
Arnold Palmer, you know, over the years, he became sort of like a grandfatherly role for me. He and I were very close. As I said, unusually so, when I was there, there weren't that many golfers there. There were a lot of people in the cable business, but not that many golfers. And so, you know, we started to huddle up a little bit. And Arnold was so great. When he would come out to LA, he would, take me for caviar at the Beverly Hills Hotel. He was just the greatest guy. And yes, we have a lot of good stories. In fact, when I got engaged to John and he really put him through the ringer to make sure he was the one. And at the same time, Arnold was about to marry Kit. because his wife, when he had passed away already, and he married Kit. And so we teased that we were going to have a double wedding. And so I said, you know, if Kit is good enough for you, I'm sure John is good enough for me. We're all good. He liked That's him. Awesome. It was good. And you Fantastic. Know what's so cute is my son, who really, he met Arnold, I think, two times, and, you know, up until he was maybe 4 years old. But for whatever reason, my son, when he was very young, he used to always do the thumbs up. And then, just like Arnie. And I was like, where did you get that from? It's so cute, though. So I've got
some
pictures of Will doing the thumbs up with Arnie. Yeah.